SAFE tells the FAA requiring an ATP in airline right seats is a bad idea. CAPA says it's a great idea. And the FAA issues an airworthiness bulletin regarding TKS fluid. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, April 7th, 2010. SAFE, the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators, has submitted a detailed response to an FAA ANPRM entitled New Pilot Certification Requirements for Air Carrier Operations. Earlier this year, the FAA solicited input on proposals to enhance air safety through improved pilot qualification and training requirements. Two of the issues under consideration include a requirement for pilots who transport passengers to hold an ATP certificate with the appropriate aircraft category, class, and type rating, as well as a requirement for an air carrier-specific authorization on existing pilot certificates. SAFE emphasized in its comments that hours alone are not an indicator of competency, and that competency is the indicator that should be emphasized to ensure public safety. SAFE says the FAA and air carriers are responsible for ensuring proper training and competencies, and that the FAA needs to perform its role more aggressively. The group suggests the administrator convene a panel of experts to determine the specific competencies that should be included in pre-hire decision-making as well as post-hire training and certification of Part 121 air crews. When the U.S. Senate passed its version of the FAA reauthorization bill by a 93-0 vote on March 22nd, South Carolina GOP Senator Jim DeMint's amendment allowing the use of cockpit voice recordings for routine checking of flight crew performance was not in the bill, and the Coalition of Airline Pilots Associations is publicly expressing thanks to its members who contacted members of the Senate to protest the provision. CAPA says more than 3,000 concerned pilots sent over 6,000 emails to Senate offices voicing their opposition. Over in the House, the reauthorization bill passed last year contains language which would make an ATP certificate, with its prerequisite 1,500 hours, a minimum requirement for hire as a Part 121 pilot. The Senate version has set a minimum of 800 hours. While the FAA's Randy Babbitt, SAFE, and many industry observers argue that ensuring competence and professionalism is not just about accumulating bulk hours, CAPA, which is after all a coalition of unions, says it not only wants the ATP requirement for airlines, but also for Part 135. The coalition is also opposing language that would expand access during the hiring process to pilots' other records pertaining to the individual's performance as a pilot that are maintained by the air carrier. The fact that Marvin Renslow, the captain of Continental Connections Flight 1549, was able to hide previous failed check rides from Colgan Air when he was hired there has been a red flag for investigators trying to prevent a recurrence of those circumstances. The FAA has issued a special airworthiness information bulletin for TKS de-icing fluid after determining that under certain conditions the stuff is flammable. The concern is not considered an unsafe condition that would warrant an AD. In prior certifications of TKS systems on board aircraft, the issue of fluid flammability was not a concern. The fluid was simply considered to be non-flammable. However, recent testing has shown that if it pools or becomes a mist at the right temperature and is exposed to an ignition source, it can burn. The FAA recommends that all type certificate, amended TC, and STC applicants assess the pertinent regulations and take appropriate action. Those actions could involve keeping the fluid out of passenger cabins and away from electrical wiring. Get more details in the text version of this story, dated April 6th, at aero-news.net. Up next on ANN, NTSB says confusion in terms delayed a search for a pilot who probably survived the crash. A small Missouri town wants to close its airport, and Evergreen International is suing Boeing. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 7th. I'm Paul Plack. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board wants the FAA to standardize terms used in contact with outside agencies after a pilot who apparently survived a crash into mountainous terrain was left to die over a miscommunication. In a letter to FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, the board recalls a case dealing with AFRCC, the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center, which has responsibility for initiation and coordination of search and rescue activities in the U.S. The pilot of a Piper PA-38 was scud running when he crashed into trees and rising mountainous terrain at Amicalola Falls State Park in Dawsonville, Georgia. Evidence indicates he survived the crash and even switched his transponder to squawk the 7700 emergency code. NTSB goes on to say controllers at the Atlanta Air Route Traffic Control Center noticed the unidentified stationary radar target about 50 miles north of Atlanta. But in describing the emergency alert on the radar screen to the AFRCC, the traffic management coordinator used the phrase, flashing emergency beacon. The AFRCC controller apparently confused that with an ELT signal being received from the south side of Atlanta, and when the ELT issue was closed, nobody went looking on the north side. It wasn't until the next day, when the pilot's family called to say he'd never arrived, that a search was started, and by the time he was found, it was too late. The NTSB recommends the FAA develop, in conjunction with the AFRCC, specific phraseology for communicating about the location, time, and nature of ELT signals and emergency beacon codes, and provide training for all FAA personnel who might be required to interact with the AFRCC. A small town in Missouri plans to hire an attorney with expertise in aviation law to start the process of closing its local airport. Administrators in St. Clair, Missouri, which is west of St. Louis, have asked the Board of Aldermen to choose and work with a panel with the purpose of closing the general aviation facility. A report in the Missourian says it's not clear if the land was purchased using federal grants, in which case the city would be obligated to keep the airport open in perpetuity. But the city has taken federal grants totaling $600,000 in 2003 and 2004 for the airport. If the airport is closed arbitrarily, the city could be subject to a fine of $10,000 per day for every day it's closed. St. Clair Mayor Ron Blum campaigned for the office with the closing of the airport as part of his platform. Quote, "We have funded this airport's deficits every year. Washington and Sullivan both have updated airfields. There's no way we can compete. The question is, are we better off without it rather than to continue to subsidize it?" Unquote. Apparently, hiring an aviation attorney occurred to him, but hiring a consultant who knows how to run a self-sufficient airport never crossed his mind. Evergreen International of Oregon is suing Boeing, saying it will lose $175 million in profits due to a breach in its contract to operate the Dreamlifter, which brings large fuselage parts to Boeing facilities from outside suppliers. Evergreen says Boeing should be required to pay it that amount. Evergreen had a long-term contract, but it was subject to review every 5 months. The Associated Press cites a Boeing source who says the contract is being pulled from Evergreen and awarded to Atlas Air, a New York company, in consideration of almost $1 billion owed to Atlas due to delays in delivering the 747-8. Beyond that, the company has had no other comment. Still ahead, the $200 commute is making a comeback in New York. F-16s might get a 10-year extension. And Women in Space International? You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, April 7th. I'm Paul Plack. The $200 commute is making a comeback in New York, and it's being seen as a harbinger of an economic spring. Liberty Helicopters says people living in New Jersey can now commute to Manhattan aboard one of their helicopters for around $200 a day, saving those drivers about 14 hours a week in New York traffic. And they're getting a lot of interest in the service. It's one of several helicopter companies again offering commuter service in the area. Bloomberg reports the flight will travel about 20 miles from Port Monmouth, New Jersey, to helipads on West 30th Street and Pier 6 near Wall Street. Liberty says it's already been approached by about 150 potential clients inquiring about the service. Transportation consultant Robert Grotel says corporate clients are responsible for about a third of the helicopter traffic in New York City, and that air transportation is one of the first things to be cut from corporate budgets when the economy tanks. Helicopter Association International President Matt Zaccaro says the helicopter industry now contributes about $150 million a year to the New York economy, which is about $30 million below its pre-recession peak. The trend could also be good news for helicopter pilots in the New York area. Bloomberg says that unemployment in that category surged to about 35% last year, with the economy in freefall. The U.S. Air Force has begun conducting structural stress assessments on F-16s to assess the feasibility of continuing to fly them for another 10 years. Air Force Chief of Staff General Norman Schwartz confirmed the action is underway as a hedge against possible delays in the delivery of over 1,700 F-35 Joint Strike Fighters. In a speech to the Air Force Association, Schwartz said buying new aircraft to fill the gap would not be cost-effective. Quote, "I do not think it's wise to dissipate the limited pool of resources available for F-35 by procuring less capable aircraft," unquote. Defense News reports that some members of Congress think the Air Force should procure what are called 4.5 generation fighters, that's a reference to the F-35's nomenclature as a fifth generation fighter, in order to close the gap. The Air Force plans to retire as many as 250 of the longest-serving F-15 and F-16 fighters, as well as a few A-10 Thunderbolt 2s, over the next 5 years, to save about $3.5 billion. And finally today, for the first time since women began flying in space 50 years ago, four are now in space at the same time, aboard the International Space Station. Dorothy Metcalf Lindenberger, Naoko Yamakaze, and Stephanie Wilson arrived aboard the shuttle Discovery, which launched on Monday morning for the space station. Tracy Caldwell Dyson reached the station aboard a Soyuz spacecraft on Sunday. The Times of London reports that the milestone has gone largely unnoticed by NASA. Bill Gerstenmaier, NASA's Associate Administrator for Space Operations, retorts, quote, "Maybe that's a credit to the system, right? That I don't think of it as male or female. I just think of it as a talented group of people going to do their job in space," unquote. The first woman in space was Soviet cosmonaut Valentina Tereshkova in 1963. The first U.S. female astronaut was Sally Ride in 1983. Not counting the four up there now, 51 women had flown in space prior to Sunday. Do you suppose one day we'll be reporting on the formation of Women in Space International? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, 2008 Instructor of the Year Max Trescott explains why that recent near miss over San Francisco between a Cessna and a Boeing 777 may not actually have broken any rules. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.